Time now for hour number two of this weekend's two-hour installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and of course the host of the program is Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. Here she is now in conversation with Edward Humes. He's the author of a new audiobook, A Man and His Mountain, the everyman who created Kendall Jackson and became America's great wine entrepreneur. It's a story of self-made billionaire Jess Jackson, who put Chardonnay on America's tables as he built the Kendall Jackson wine empire from a few mountainous acres of grapes. The audiobook is published by Brilliance Audio on MP3 and CD.
Now, in reading about someone's life, sometimes you really have to go back to their childhood to try to understand them better and why they did what they do when they grow up. And Jess, because his family desperately needed money, he had some kind of job from the time he was nine, and the jobs generally, you know, they were tough. He had to use strong hands and his back. So what made Jess say later on in his life that his blue-collar manual labor pedigree was a blessing and an asset? I would have thought he was very happy to put it behind him.
You would think, but he had a mighty work ethic, and he was not content unless he had a full day of labors, whatever it was. And, you know, this is probably the only dock worker turned lumberjack turned cop turned lawyer turned winemaker to work his way onto the Forbes 400 list of the richest men in America. I mean, just he's fairly unique in that regard.
You can say that again. I mean,
he put himself through law school, and so he went from working at a variety of jobs, including on the police force in Berkeley, California, where he was attending school. And when he had his law degree, he threw himself into that and was quite successful. And that was his first post-college career, first working for the state and then working for himself, and it got more and more intense, and he decided he needed a break, and that's when he bought his first tiny little vineyard and grew some grapes as a hobby, because it was supposed to be his great relaxation, and it ended up being even more intensive labors than anything he had experienced before. And as you said, that second act, you know, probably the greatest second act in the history of American entrepreneurship began after age 50. He completely reinvented himself, mortgaged his house, threw everything he had into starting this wine enterprise.
So he was also, you got to say, he was a risk taker. And so he had, you know, this small amount of land, really 84 acres on this mountain. And what caused him then to go and launch his own winery, which was really such a big undertaking, and why did it nearly bankrupt him? Because it was a risk that almost didn't work.
Well, you know, there's an old saying about making wine. How do you become a millionaire making wine? Start with $3 million, and that's kind of how it begins. It's a money pit, and he swore he was never going to make his own wine. He just liked to be a farmer. He liked to grow things, and he was selling his grapes to winemakers around California who needed extra fruit, and that was fine. It was easy, and he hired somebody else to handle some of that, and every year he planted a little more because it was so lucrative. Well, a lot of other people had that idea, and this is back in the late 70s, early 80s, and suddenly there was a glut in grapes, and he couldn't sell his grapes. And what was he going to do, let it rot on the vines? He decided he was going to go try his hand at making wine himself. But it was Jess Jackson. He just couldn't go in slowly and gradually. He wanted to build a winery and launch a major effort. And that's required him to pump all his savings, mortgage his houses, and other properties he had accumulated over the years as investments, and you know, take this big risk that somehow he could help redefine California as a place for quality wines, whereas it had never been regarded in that way before.
You know, what makes it even more interesting is that the wine that he chose to work with and wanted to make it a big success was a wanton Chardonnay that people really weren't drinking that much at that time. So what were they drinking, and what did people think about Chardonnay?
Well, it just was not, it's hard to believe now, because it is the most popular type of wine in America, but at the time, people didn't even call it Chardonnay. It was often referred to as white Burgundy, and just, you know, and Jess chose it for a couple of reasons. One, because he could grow those grapes under the conditions that existed on the property he had bought. Second reason was you can turn around Chardonnay more quickly. It doesn't have to be aged as long before you can bring it to market. And, you know, until you can grow your fruit, bottle it, age it, prepare it for market, you're doing nothing but spending money. You're not making any money. So he chose a kind of wine that was very practical to make. And he thought he could bring something different to its flavor profile that would be more popular with consumers. And he, after a couple of disasters, came up with a blend that really resonated with many Americans who tried it, and including the then First Lady Nancy Reagan, who gave Jess his big break and started pouring the Kendall Jackson Chardonnay at the White House for state events.
Didn't her husband, President Reagan, you know, promoted the wine? Why was he interested in doing that?
Well, he was a Californian, and Jess was making California wine, so he had interest in serving the wines of his home state. And Kendall Jackson's was referred to him by a wine broker they had worked with for many years, the Reagans, when he was governor, and they tried it and just loved it. And that story was picked up by the famous San Francisco columnist Herb Kane, and he branded Kendall Jackson Chardonnay the Nancy's wine, and that story really brought a lot of attention to what had been an obscure brand of wine, and the sales just took off after that.
So you could say that Jess Jackson was a Steve Jobs of the grape world, and he built his empire really from nothing to the highest-selling brand of super premium wine in the United States. And I guess, you know, in your book you said, because it seems kind of incredible at the time, that he had revenues of $600 million every year.
Yeah, well, he was doubling his sales every year for many years. It's the Vintner's Reserve Chardonnay that from Kendall Jackson that became the most popular wine in America and has been a consistent seller for decades. It's evolved over time, but it's recognizable from as that first Chardonnay he came up with. Of course, he has accumulated many other vineyards and types of wine after that, but that always was his core product. And yes, he was a very innovative and a bit of a contrarian, just as Steve Jobs was.
Yes.
He would be mocked for what he was trying to do, and then in short order imitated, because what he was coming up with was so smart.
Worked. It really did work. Now, I'd be very remiss if I didn't talk about his other passion, because it was horse racing and breeding. And, you know, it's so interesting because it's such a different passion. But he, again, you know, he really was a novice, as he was when he went into the wine business, when it came to all the racing, breeding, and training, and the horse racing establishment. And he owned this filly, I guess, Rachel Alexandra. So what did she do that was so special? I couldn't believe it.
Oh, yeah. Well, Jess really came into the racing industry with like gangbusters, and you know, that the old good old boy network in bluegrass country likes nothing better than to part a rich Californian from his money. And at first, it looked like that was going to happen. He was really taken advantage of by some of the insiders there, but he turned it around. And one of the horses he obtained and brought to high-stakes racing was Rachel Alexandra. She became the first filly, the first female horse, to win the Preakness, part of the Triple Crown, in almost a century. It broke all the rules. You normally don't race female horse against a field full of alpha males, it's not easy to come out on top that way. And plus, he was put in the worst possible position to race this horse, the 13th position from the post. No horse has ever won that arduous race from that position, but Rachel Alexander broke out and beat the Kentucky Derby winner and proved, again, you know, in a completely different venue, proved that Jackson knew what he was doing.
That's Edward Humes in conversation with Carol Marx. His audiobook is titled A Man and His Mountain, The Everyman Who Created Kendall Jackson and Became America's Greatest Wine Entrepreneur, published by Brilliance Audio. Richard Neer, our senior correspondent, will join us, and he'll be with us the rest of the way. He'll be talking with football player turned analyst Heinz Ward. He'll be talking with the author of a book about ovarian cancer, Betsy Horn, and he'll be talking to me about Pete Seeger passing away this past week. Lots of interesting topics, and it's all ahead when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
Did you know? An estimated 16 million Americans suffer from a chronic inflammatory facial condition called rosacea, and most of them don't know it. Often mistaken for acne, there are many signs and symptoms of rosacea besides facial redness, pimples, and visible blood vessels. Other symptoms may include burning, stinging, swelling, and even enlargement of the nose. Rosacea can also affect the eyes, causing a bloodshot appearance and irritation that could lead to vision loss. Any one of these signs and symptoms can mean rosacea, and without medical help, it can become increasingly severe and wreak havoc on your personal and professional life. Rosacea typically appears any time after age 30. So if you experience any sign of rosacea, see a dermatologist for diagnosis and treatment. Or for more information, visit the National Rosacea Society at rosacea.org.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison, and here's our senior correspondent Richard Neer in conversation with Heinz Ward. He's an NBC broadcaster on Sunday Night Football in America, a former football player with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and a recent Ironman triathlon finisher. He's going to talk about how to get fit and his picks for this weekend's Super Bowl.
First of all, Heinz, welcome to the program, and I know that a lot of NFL players, when their playing days are over, they're not used to eating the same amount of food that they used to eat, and all of a sudden the pounds come back, the exercise that they get, and the fitness regimens that they have during their playing days are gone. Was this something that you faced? Was this something that you were afraid of, or did you have a plan all along once you stopped playing?
Well, I had a plan just to stay in shape. I wasn't one of those guys that really wanted to get big when I was, you know, enjoying the retired life, and I made a bet to a couple of my teammates that whenever we have our reunion that I was going to be in better shape than they were. So, you know, that keeps me motivated to go out and continue to work hard to stay fit.
A lot of people talk about the difference between football shape and just being in shape. Can you tell us the differences and the things you needed to do?
It's like night and day. The training regimen for training to be a football player than just being in shape in general. It's just different from the sense of going out and running sprints, lifting weights and stuff like that. A lot of people, you know, they just endurance athletes. And, you know, a lot of the football players got fast twitch muscles, and being an endurance athlete, a person who likes to run, they don't have that. So I like to refer it as the turtle and the hare. You know, For the football player, they're the hare, but the endurance athlete, they're the turtle, and they find a way to get it done at the end of the day.
Oh, tell us about this Fit Studio. What's it all about?
Yeah, I teamed up with Sear to really promote FitStudio.com. You can log online and register. You can connect your devices and sync them up to different fitness apps and other devices. And at the same time, you can earn money. It's a free online fitness community where you have programs, workouts, articles about fitness and nutrition. And Sears is promoting a points for progress program where Sears rewards you for getting and staying fit. You can earn Shop Your Way points by completing different challenges. And one of the challenges in it is Fit in 14. I really encourage people to get fit in 2014. And you can earn $5 for every 14 miles that you accumulate. So we're really just trying to encourage people to walk a little more, run a little more. And by logging, connecting up, and syncing your fitness apps, you can log and keep track of what you do on a day-to-day basis around the workplace area. And I think that's a great way to keep people motivated by using different incentives. You can earn money, and that'll help that New Year's resolution go all the way throughout the whole year.
Yeah, and you talk about New Year's resolutions, and most of the time you hear that it's to lose weight to get fit. But what about that first step? That seems to be the hardest one for most people because they say they want to do it, and yet there's always a reason to postpone it, not to do it. What's the biggest incentive toward making that first step?
Well, it's all about having goals. You have to set a goal, a real goal, not just what you want to do. It's got to be realistic of what you want to do. And by having goals on a week-to-week basis, you know, it gives you something to motivate. It motivates you to do it on a week-to-week basis. But by signing up to Fit Studio and connecting your devices and syncing them up to fitness app, you're able to log on how many miles you accumulate throughout the day. And you'll be shocked and amazed how many miles you accumulate throughout the whole week just by logging on, syncing your devices up with your fitness apps and just, you know, keeping track of how many miles you put in a day. And if you think about it, 3 miles a day, 5 days a week, that's 15 miles. You've already accumulated $5 right there. So it's a great way that Sears is using to put incentives or to get people to work out and stay fit in 2014.
Let's talk about your former sport. Do you stay in touch with any of your former teammates? Are you still connected with the game?
Oh, always, always. For me, working with NBC, still being a part, being on the field and seeing all the different players keeps me really involved. But I don't miss it at all because those players are getting stronger, bigger, faster. For me, my Mondays, I wake up a lot easier on Mondays as compared to when I was playing.
Yeah, I heard a story about Phil Sims who was standing on the sidelines, and he said, boy, I'm glad I'm not playing today because these guys are bigger, faster, and stronger than they were even 20 years ago, and I would hate to bear some of that punishment. Now, you're not that far removed from the game, but has the game gotten faster, bigger, stronger?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just the way guys are coming in the league. I mean, you know, having that knowledge of what it takes to get your body in shape, and then you're starting to see more guys have knowledge about taking care of their bodies, and so by the time they make it to the NFL, they already have the game plan. So they just follow the game plan, and that's the reason you're seeing guys get bigger, stronger, and faster.
What are your thoughts about the whole concussion situation, the long-term health of players? I know the judge just ruled recently that maybe the settlement wasn't adequate, but what about is there anything that can be done to take concussions out of the game, or is it just going to happen no matter how much safety regulations are put in?
Well, it's going to happen. I mean, when you put two grown men together running full speed, you know, unfortunately your brain is going to shake, you know, when they collide. I mean, we know that football players will be signed up for, and, you know, football is not for everyone. So, but at the same time, as football players, we don't know the medical side of what concussions can do. I mean, that's the jobs of the doctors, the trainers on our staff. And that's the reason you're starting to see some rule changes that's going on in the league and people taking a stance on concussion. It's their job as being the doctors and the trainers. They should know what's best for the players or not. So now I think the protocol of how they're doing concussions I agree with. And with the ruling, what the judge just turned down, the ruling of the $765 million, yes, I don't think that's enough considering where our game is going to. Our game is popular, probably one of the most popular sports in all of sports. And you're starting to see the revenues go up. And you want to make sure that all the players who put their time in the NFL, that everyone taken care of when that situation occurred. You know, for me, I'm healthy now, but I don't know where I'm going to be at 10 years from now. And I want to make sure that, you know, I paid my dues playing in the league for 14 years. And, you know, you need some help on the back end. And I think it is a great deal that the judge turned that down because, say, you want everybody who put in their time in the NFL to make sure they're getting taken care of.
Some have suggested that expanding the season to 18 games or adding another round of the playoffs would not really be too conducive to players' health. It would be too much with all the people getting hurt in 16 games. What do you think about that?
It will. I mean, that's been, you're contradicting yourself talking about player safety and their health, and then you're trying to add on two games for revenue. I mean, the game is what it is now because of television. Yeah, fantasy football. So don't be too greedy at trying to make so much money where you're jeopardizing the risk of players and concussions and whatnot. So, of course, the players are not for it, you know, but I understand where the league is coming from. But to try to add two more games at the end of the season, 16 games is already long enough considering you got four preseason games. And then if you go all the way through the Super Bowl, you add another three or four games on the back end. So the season's just fine the way it is. So, you know, I'm a big advocate. Just leave it like it is.
Final thing, Hines, in your estimation, what's the best team in the National Football League this year?
I'm going to have to say Denver Broncos and the fact that Peyton Manning had an amazing year and the type of year that he's having. He's all in. It's either Super Bowl or nothing with Peyton Manning. So Denver Broncos is my favorite.
Interesting stuff. That's Hines Ward speaking with Richard Neer, and he picks the Broncos, and we'll know soon enough. And we shall see what we shall see. Richard Neer returns with more conversation. I'm going to ask him a couple of questions about Hines Ward, and we're going to talk about Pete Seeger. That's next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security webpages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray.
Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're going to be joined again in a moment by Richard Neer, who will be speaking momentarily with Betsy Horn about her new book titled A Little Touch of Cancer and How It Made Me Well, One Woman's Travels Through Ovarian Cancer, published by Serenity Publications. Richard, I'm interested in the Heinz Ward conversation that you just did in the previous segment of the program. He seems and sounds like a really nice guy. What is Heinz Ward really like?
Well, you've met all these guys. I went to school with him, and I roomed in the same dorm room with him for years and years. I found him to be a very pleasant chap.
Now, you've known a lot of these guys in your sports talk career. You used to host a program before the Giants, after the Giants games, and you've been in the locker room. You know these guys very well.
You know what, Michael? You're absolutely 180 degrees off here, because none of us know any of these guys really well.
Wow.
You know, we interview them in managed settings or after a game or in a locker room. It's all very set up. And you don't know what they do in their spare time. They could be terrible to their wives and kick their dogs and be total drunks or drug users, and we wouldn't know.
I get you, and some of their interviews are really shallow. You know, like, Coach, what are you going to do in the second half? Well, we're going to try to score more points than we did in the first half.
Well, that's the right answer.
Yeah, what does it take to win? You have to have more points on the board than the opponent. You know, but they answer it so obviously. But We don't have enough time to really get into this, but 20 seconds. The NFL with football, and probably the other leagues do, they train their rookies how to deal with the media, don't they?
Yeah, there is an indoctrination program, but obviously it sticks with some other than others. Some people just don't like the media, don't trust the media, have gotten burned by the media earlier in their careers, and are very monosyllabic and only do these interviews because they get fined $50,000 if they don't.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Very interesting indeed. Okay, well, we'll look forward to your next conversation, and then we'll talk again before the program comes to an end with some final thoughts of the day. Richard Neer, our senior correspondent. I'm Michael Harrison, and you're plugged into A Touch of Gray, which continues in a moment.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy and you feel fine. But that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Doesn't always cause symptoms, but it can be prevented. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. And he'll be talking with Betsy Horn about her book titled A Little Touch of Cancer and How It Made Me Well, One Woman's Travels Through Ovarian Cancer, published by Serenity Publications.
You were diagnosed with ovarian cancer at the age of 57. Unfortunately, I have the same experience with my wife, a little bit younger, but she was diagnosed in her late 40s. Tell us your story, how you were diagnosed, and proceed a little bit through your treatment.
Right. Well, actually, I was just on the cusp of my 60th birthday, but close enough. And I had had an ovarian cyst for several years. At that time, I'd been living in New York City, and various gynecologists said, oh, have a hysterectomy. Well, I had finally, under pressure, I felt, decided to have a hysterectomy. And that the night I had made that decision, I was having people for dinner. And a friend I hadn't seen in years, I said, oh, my gosh, listen, I'm about to do a hysterectomy. She said, wait a minute, why are you going to do that? She said, well, I have this ovarian cyst, and explained. She said, promise me you'll just do one thing, get a second opinion, go to Yale. There's a wonderful physician, Peter Schwartz, and see what he says. So off I went to Yale and was examined, and Dr. Schwartz asked the obvious questions, does it hurt you, is there bleeding, to which I said, well, no, I don't have really any symptoms. I wouldn't even know if the doctors hadn't diagnosed. He said, well, we don't just automatically do hysterectomies, we'll monitor it. So annually I made the trip to Yale. My book starts, actually, with that seventh year of going up, at which point I did not feel quite as easy and insouciant about it as I had in the past. And during my diagnostic sonogram, All of a sudden, a posse of white-coated experts came in after the younger lab technician left and said, Dr. Schwartz needs to see you upstairs. So up I went, thinking that busy Dr. Schwartz needing to see me was not did not abode well. And I said, what is the matter? And he looked at me very kindly and said, I suspect you have ovarian cancer. And that was it. I mean, groan, and you sort of collapse on yourself with something like that. But I tried to remain stalwart, and he said, I want you in as soon as possible. And in I went. We had discussed what would happen to me, how many choices I had, if any. But he said that if he found cancer, I had no choice. It was going to be a hysterectomy. And, of course, when I woke up in the operating room, having gone in at 8:30 in the morning and saw that it was 2 or 3 in the afternoon, I didn't need to be told. I knew that I must have had cancer because that was a pretty long operation.
And what regimen did you have in terms of chemotherapy after that?
Well, he was quite optimistic in one sense. But I hadn't realized at the time that his standard therapy is chemotherapy, which, although my treatment was 13 years ago, I believe it's the same protocol today, which is a combination of cisplatin and Taxol, which is now synthetically produced from the Pacific yew tree. I was diagnosed, I was prescribed 6 rounds, and the nurses didn't like the way I was responding. I needed some extra medication to get my white blood cells up. They always require that because you need to be strong enough to take the chemo. And so they cut the last round. I ended up having 5 rounds, after which I felt quite frail, but I was okay. However, I was at an emotional impasse in my life. I had been divorced recently. It was my second divorce, and I thought, you know, there is more to this cancer thing, I feel, than just genes going awry. I needed to examine my body-mind-spirit connection. I made a vow that I would, if I made it through, devote part of the rest of my life to helping other women prevent recurrence, and that I would learn how to be as healthy as I possibly could. And therein really lies the tale, the basis of my book, which goes on to describe a treatment in Europe known as biological medicine, which, kind of in a nutshell, Richard says, well, we treat the whole person, not just the disease. But it's much more obviously complex and sophisticated. That's a simplistic sort of answer.
Well, and even in the United States, I mean, through my wife's experience, she had the IP chemo. I don't know if you had that or just the through the veins, but the IP treatment, which had fallen out of favor and has come back as a standard treatment now, is basically flooding the entire trunk with cisplatin and the chemotherapy drugs as opposed to just running through the bloodstream.
Oh, really?
And it takes a lot more out of you. You have to be relatively young and fit to be able to withstand it, but it does seem to be much more effective than just the intravenous. But going back to what you're talking about, the European treatment, you also you're talking about a whole lifestyle change. Now, my wife, it happened to her during a particularly stressful period in her life with her job. Did you find that stress is something that, I won't say if you avoid stress you can avoid a recurrence, but that this is a factor, perhaps?
There is absolutely no question. And, in fact, one of the most enlightening books I read over the period of figuring things out was a book by Dr. Candace Pert, very highly regarded physician, called The Molecules of Emotion. And she asserts that it's not just the mind, but the body that stores emotion. And the stress caused by not getting on board with yourself, in other words, you know, unresolved emotional conflicts, relieving the stress, can cause cellular changes. Now, most cancers are not genetically caused. The percentage is very low. But she asserts that stressors, whether they're dietary, physical, accumulative, emotional, or other, can cause cellular changes. And so this can cause genes which ordinarily wouldn't express themselves as the doctors. That's sort of their technical term. And that's one of the ways that the trouble starts. It all starts with a mutation, obviously, at the cellular level.
And there's also a correlation, at least her doctors thought, with weight, that a lot of women who suffer this were a little overweight, and one of the reasons she came through it well is that she is in relatively good physical condition, and that goes along with nutrition, exercise, and the European way that you're talking about, I would imagine.
Absolutely. I was not overweight, but I have read, because I will blog about this on my website, which is about to be launched, and, about active metabolic fat, that layer of fat that so many Americans with our obesity problems seem to have, which resides, you know, right the band sort of around the waist. This is called brown fat. It's very, very dangerous at many levels. But the European theory of biological medicine is that it's not what you ate yesterday or the day before. It's the aggregate. It's the accumulation of what you've done, eating the wrong foods, eating processed foods, not getting enough vegetables, diet and exercise. Even the American Cancer Association says that's it. That we can prevent some of these illnesses or genes from expressing themselves if we follow good dietary standards. And clearly, to be overweight, the body mass index being too high, is dangerous.
And I would imagine, too, in addition to all of this, you still see your doctors on a fairly regular basis. You check your counts and everything?
Yeah, I do. And it is a change in my living. I'm actually on my way up to Yale to get my annual mammogram and to be examined by Dr. Schwartz. But, you know, the guiding principle of biological medicine is that illness develops out of the imbalances in our biological terrain. That's our inner environment, called in Europe the milieu, or what we would call the intracellular fluid. We're over 60% water. And therefore, that inner environment is very important. And what they say in biological medicine is that we must keep it more alkaline. And really, that requires primarily a plant-based diet that doesn't deny meat, if you like it, or fish or animal protein. But it does say that the balance should be more placed on alkaline-causing foods and or supplements.
The book is called A Little Touch of Cancer and How It Made Me Well. And the website, as you mentioned, hasn't launched, but can you give us the address?
Yes.
So then when
it does, we
can be aware?
It is launched, but it's we're reconstructing it. So you can go on it now, and in a few days you can still go on it, but it'll just look slightly different. It's www.betsyhorn, that's BETSYHORN.com. And it features one little thing. Do we have a moment left for me?
Sure.
I am launching also, beside the book, over time, a whole series of books which will be available very inexpensively at about $1.99, called the Common Sense Series, which I'm writing in tandem with the appropriate doctor on the subject. For example, the first book will be called The Common Sense Book of Oral Health, because so much illness comes, and it's being proven now, it's evidence-based, there's studies, through poor periodontal health. So that will be the next featured book on the site. But there are a lot of information, wonderful interviews, there are free downloads. So thank you for mentioning it, Richard.
That's Betsy Horn in conversation with our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. Her book is titled A Little Touch of Cancer and How It Made Me Well, One Woman's Travels Through Ovarian Cancer. It's published by Serenity Publications. And if you want more information, go to BetsyHorn.com. If you want more information about Carol Marks and A Touch of Gray, go to our website, atouchofgray.com, and we spell gray with an E. I'm Michael Harrison, and A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, will continue with some final words between me and Richard Neer in just a moment. Thank you.
Your age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we continue our ongoing dialogue with our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. Richard, let's put on our pop culture hats. Really, really sad loss, although I'm so glad he lived a full life, 94 years old, a tremendous icon in the folk music movement. Even beyond that, he's an American poet and popular figure, singer, songwriter, folk singer. Pete Seeger passed. And he's one of those guys you kind of hope lives forever. You know, it's just can't imagine the world without him.
And, you know, the interesting thing is we used to play his records back in the 60s and listen to the Hootenannies and all of that. I never realized that he was banned from television. Did you know that?
I know that he was banned from a lot of things because his views were considered to be provocative.
Communist.
He was called a commie. Yeah, he was a pinko. And he wasn't a commie as in the Kremlin commies. He was a commie on a more political science level, people that don't like anything socialistic or liberal or, collective.
Well, he was hauled before the House Un-American Activities Committee. And refused to answer a lot of questions. They asked him, did you perform at this communist rally? Did you know this guy? And he said, I don't have to answer those questions. I'm an American citizen. I can play music wherever I want to play music. I don't have to tell you where I played.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing how the fascism and intolerance on both the left and the right come to the same place? You know, where were you? Who were you? Knock on the door. Take your freedom. He stood up for freedom. He was a guy that was into freedom and justice. I don't think he was a wonk. I don't think he was the kind of political that would play on today's talk radio or today's debate. I think he just was a guy that had a sense of justice and common sense. So it's hard to say by today's left-right liberal-conservative terms, and here we are on a talk radio station, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners, by virtue of the fact that they're listening to talk radio, have political points of view, although this program is not that political. It's more social political. I would think that, you know, we could be treading on thin ice, but I don't see Pete Seeger as fitting into today's liberal or conservative mold. I think he was a champion of freedom, and some conservatives would consider him to be a strict constitutionalist.
Well, I suppose in some ways. I mean, he was maybe more of a populist or a libertarian, if you wanted to assign a label to him.
And those fit some of the conservative values. You know, there's a very fuzzy line between modern libertarianism, I have to say, with a small L, and a conservative point of view. For the most part, most people don't really understand political science in the classical sense, and I can't say that I necessarily do either.
Well, Pete Seeger was, you know, he would say, listen to my songs, listen to the songs I've written, listen to the lyrics, this is what I'm about. And basically, I think he was about human values, goodness, peace as opposed to violence. You know, he was a very gentle man, and in his later life, he lived in Beacon, New York, and he had that sloop Clearwater, which was dedicated to keeping the Hudson River clean, which was a pretty non-controversial position.
Unless you want to politicize it, which, of course, you can do with almost anything. You know what else I liked about him? I liked his sound. I liked the way his voice sounded. I love that old folk sound, and I wish there was more of it. You know,
and he played the banjo.
I love the banjo. I mean, if I could play any instrument, I'd play the banjo. It's just such a happy-sounding instrument, and it looks so difficult to play. And I hear it is difficult. But, you know, he had that folk sound that, you know, that so many of the people emulated. I was riding on a freight train, and I wrote this song one night. I met a man. And, you know, I never met him, and I never spoke to him, but I sure did like him, regardless of any politics.
And
thanks.
One of his biggest followers was Bob Dylan. And Pete Seeger, allegedly at the Newport Folk Festival, when Bob Dylan came out with the band and went electric, allegedly picked up an axe and threatened to sever the electric cord.
Yeah, I know, that was the whole thing. Bev Santanella, our producer, just reminded me, I've interviewed Pete Seeger on this program. So what do you think about that? Maybe we can clean that through. Maybe we'll dig it up. Richard, we're out of time. Thank you so much. Richard Neer, our senior correspondent, thank you. Thank you, Beverly Santanella, our producer. Thank you, Carol Marks, the host and founder of the show, Steve Wiseman, Kevin Casey, the entire Touch of Grey broadcast team. I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another 2-hour installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups.